I've done it.
You
yeah.
You gotta take a look at your-
life is. What's with your life?
Running like a red disease.
I'm running like a red disease. Ghetto people.
Stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, yo. You got to learn to love yourself. Yeah, ghetto people. Ghetto people.
Motherland Media is on the air. You are listening to African Perspectives on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. African Perspectives, where we talk about the issues of our day from an African worldview, an African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak. Having been granted permission, to our ancestors whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters and friends, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they call themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. So I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is always an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who is living, and everyone who will live in the future. We have a common ancestral root. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were other cultures as well, such as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, great civilizations that were flourishing while Europe was still in a medieval or dark age. So we pour this libation to those contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, uprooted out of Africa, laying a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. They are now in North America, Central America, South America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to brothers and sisters who suffered the Holocaust of enslavement, of captivity. We do not know their names, but because of them, we are here. So we honor them and their sacrifice. We say Ashe. We pour libation to those men and women who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you'll know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a slave want to do? It wants to get free. There's over 400 recorded revolts of our people fighting on the continent, throughout the Middle Passage, and this hemisphere. We resisted. We were not slaves. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master, and we haven't and we will never submit. So we give honor and reverence to those men and women who fought. Denmark Vesey, Gabriel Prosser, Harriet Tubman, Nat Turner, and many, many others. We honor them. We respect them for always standing and fighting for the liberation of our people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good community life because we don't have good family life. Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is bad because we lack consciousness. Consciousness is more than just awareness. It's a deeper understanding of who you are culturally, historically, and the necessity to come together to produce family, which is produces good community life. So we pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We say Ashe. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family. Hope everything is well with you today. Hope you've had a great week, and hopefully you have a great weekend planned. And I hope the weather is accommodating for you to do all the things that you need to do. But of course, if it is not, and you have to do it anyway, no matter even if it's 5 below with a wind chill factor of 25 below, if you have to do it, you got to do it anyway. I know as a firefighter, man, the cold weather was a dread for me. I tell you that now. You know, it was a dread. So, but I had to do it anyway. So you go out there and you just, you know, do your thing. In fact, in firefighting in weather like this, you hope that the water sprays you on your over your body, over your coat, and of course it ices over. And your coat stays nice and iced and hard because inside you're warm. But if your coat thaws out and now you're wet, and then you know, that's why sometimes I didn't get on the bus. They used to bring buses in to the fire scene so you can get on the bus and get warm and kind of relax, especially at greater alarms when we're going to be there for an extended period of time. And if you got on that bus and you kind of thawed out, you got wet, then you went back out into that freezing temperature and you kind of like chilled to the bone. So I was like, nah, I'm going to stay here. I'm going to just, you know, if anything, I'll just love to get my hands warm. You know, my feet were warm because the fire boots were pretty well insulated. But yeah, it is what it is. And we're experiencing extreme weather, you know, throughout this country. With unbelievable temperatures, it's snowed in Tallahassee. Yeah, it is what it is. And a lot of times there are some meteorologists or weather persons who don't want to talk about climate change. They don't want to say that because we are down here in the South and we're experiencing this and these temperatures is because of climate change. Because when you say the word climate change or global warming, you are recognizing that human beings caused this particular issue, this particular problem to happen, you know, by the constant use of fossil fuels and aerosols and all these other things that have disrupted the ecology. Strip mining, everything. More hurricanes, more earthquakes, more this, more that. Yeah. So, But we're going to have a good program today. And once again, apologizing for technical difficulties on Wednesday. And a little bit this morning and trying to start on time as I try my best to be on time, to be an on-time person. It just wasn't happening. So we did a few things here and there, and I'm hoping that you are hearing me. And please, if you are hearing me, let me know. Give me a call at 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. This is African Perspectives, and we're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And then on Mondays, I believe we're going to start this Monday, is going to be By Black 365, and I think it's starting at 8 o'clock. I got to get the exact show time, but By Black 365 will be premiering this Monday. And then on Wednesday is Revive with Sister POC, and that's 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. And then on Thursday, it's Us Lifting Us. They had a good program last night with Baba Kimbizi and Baba Akima. Good program from 9 p.m. Us Lifting Us, Ulu. And, of course, we're excited about the Cafe Ulu, which is about to open in the next few weeks. So here those who are here in the Atlanta area. It's right off of Sylvan Road and Georgia 166, Georgia High 166. You can easily get off whatever direction you're coming. If you're coming in a westerly direction, you get off and make a right. If you're coming in an easterly direction, you get off and make a left and then go under the underpass, and it's right there. It's right there. Time for an awakening this evening, 8 p.m. with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Time for an awakening. And then tomorrow, it's Saturday, Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. Oh, Time for an Awakening tonight is 8 p.m. 8 p.m. to about 11 on. And and sometimes, I know Brother Richard and Brother Elliot, you know, sometimes they go longer, sometimes they don't go as long. You know, it all depends. So, but tomorrow, Troy Wilmore is 10 a.m. till noon on Sports Talk, 10 a.m. to noon. And then in the later afternoon, Dr. Rogers with Black Reality Think Tank. 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. And then Sunday, Revive with Sister POC, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Sunday. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Just a few things I want to continue to talk to. I'll continue to make mention of the Nguza Saba. Because the Nguza Saba should be incorporated into our everyday lives. And Sister Marimba Ani gave me this, the Nguza Saba, from an African sovereigntist standpoint, an African sovereign interpretation of the Nguza Saba. I will continue to read that, talk about that, because there is no doubt in my mind that the transformation for African people is something that we already know and already have. It's innate in us, but because the majority of our people, and it's unfortunate, you know, still believe in somehow, some way that Europeans will have an epiphany and all of the madness, all of the craziness that they've heaped upon us and how they've made us look at ourselves and each other with such disdain and disgust and hatred and self-hatred that will be truly be accepted. It ain't happened. It hasn't happened. It ain't happening now, and it ain't going to happen. But if we incorporate these principles into our everyday lives, umoja, unity, the Pan-Africanist vision of African people throughout the world, joining forces to fight for African sovereignty and to build an African world order. We have every right to be sovereign, to be independent, self-determining, liberated. We have every right, and we don't have to ask nobody for permission. We don't have to ask the oppressor, the colonizer, the European, the Caucasian, the cracker. We don't have to ask them nothing. All we have to do is put into our minds to do it. It is about the mind. We don't have to ask them nothing. Kujichagulia, self-determination. African people defining ourselves and determining our own destiny as a sovereign people. Ujima, collective working responsibility. African people working together, being responsible to and for each other, and accepting a common system of accountability that we determine to make sure that, yes, me and you, you and us, we are doing what is right for us. And we're not asking anybody. We determine what is right for us. We deal with those who are within our group and those who are outside our group. So if there are traitors within our group, we deal with them. Ujamaa, our familyhood, creating economic cooperatives based on the concept of economic and African familyhood, interdependence, interrelationships, and community, national and global African unity. That no matter where we are on the planet, we are an African people. And we have a homeland. We have a base. I choose to be here in Europe. I choose to be here in the United States or in South America or in the Caribbean. I choose to, but I have a homeland. I have a base. I have a base that is solid, that works with and for each other. NIA, purpose. African people sharing common goals that determine our commitments and guides our choices and decisions. This gives purpose to our lives and to our work, and it tells us why we were born to be African, to embrace that. All of the dimensions of it. From light, bright, and damn near white to blue, black. I love it all. I love Africa, the land. All of the diversity of on the continent, all of the mineral wealth of the continent, it is ours. NIA, purpose. African people sharing common goals that determine our commitments and guides our choices and decisions. This gives purpose to our lives and to our work, and it tells us why we were born to be African. Kumba, our creativity, to think with African minds and to create from our African center. When we practice this principle, we no longer imitate non-Africans. We make our own way. We are who we are. If there's something that has been in our experience that we feel is good for us, that we feel like it is usable, we use it. If not, we discard it. We kick it to the curb. Everything must be determined by us without any outside influence. Imani, faith. To believe in the vision of African sovereignty and to have the passion and the will, the heart, the determination to bring it into being, to bring it into existence. So at least you'll hear that ongoing forever on this program, because that's what we need to do. It is there for us. Everything is there. I talk about the number 13 being the number of transformation. 12 completes the cycle. 13 begins anew. The Caucasians, because see, this is something that we knew. This is something that was brought forth by us. And of course, if you understand the beginning of this country, I ain't talking about Puritans, Pilgrims, Christians, nothing. I'm talking about the Caucasian men who, they were deists, they were Masons. They have the knowledge, they have the subverted African knowledge that they have taken and subverted. In ancient Kemet, the number 13 was a powerful number. It was a number of transformation. 12 completes the cycle, 13 begins anew. And yet these Caucasians have subverted our knowledge. The number 13. Why did the Caucasians begin with 13 colonies? Why not 10? Why not 15? Why 13? Because
they subverted the knowledge that we must possess, and they understood that the number 13 is a powerful number. It is a number of transformation. 12 completes the cycle. 13 begins anew. And you see that, if I say to you, if Jesus the Christ had how many disciples? He had 12 plus Jesus, 13. Signs in a zodiac. There are 12 signs in a zodiac plus the sun, 13. 12 jurors on a trial plus the judge, 13. So you see this number 13. Because they wanted you to believe that the number 13 was an evil, spooky number. Friday the 13th. No 13th row in some airlines. No 13th floor on some hotels. The number 13 is a bad number. No, they understood it. They just want to make you believe that. So you couldn't use that number to transform yourself. You couldn't incorporate that number to transform yourself. Because the number 13 is the number of transformation. 12 completes the cycle. 13 begins anew. King Arthur had 12 knights at the mythical round table. No, there are people who believe King Arthur was real because of how Britain has done what it has done. It's a fiction. He had 12 knights plus King Arthur, 13. So then how can we put this number 13 in our daily lives to transform ourselves? Take the seven principles, your moja, kujichakalia, ujima, ujama, nia, kumba, and creativity. And faith. Mani. You have those seven principles. Hold the seven. Add two of them for five C's. The first C is consciousness. I've dedicated my life and I'm committed that every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on this radio program is the express purpose of this program to help raise your consciousness, is to put something on your mind. That's why we only talk about independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty on this program. There are very few programs like this. We need more. And I'm not competing with anybody. I'm just out here trying to do the best I can. We're helping us understand what we're up against, what we're living in, and what we need to do. Consciousness. Consciousness is more than just awareness. It's a deeper understanding of who you are culturally, who you are historically, who we are as a people. I always say that the most revolutionary thing that we can do at this very moment is say that I am an African. We are African people, and embrace that consciousness. The next C, because once you have consciousness, you develop the next C, courage. You have courage. Can't nobody, trip you out. You stand on principle. You have courage. The third C, confidence. Confidence. You can pass the test, get the job, the promotion. You have confidence. Go to whatever school you want to go to. Nobody can tell you who you are because you know who you are. You have confidence, not cockiness, not ego. You ain't tripping, but you have a deep confidence in yourself, in your ability. Confidence. The fourth C, conscience. Knowing what is morally right and wrong and doing what's right. Standing on principle, having integrity, doing what is right when no one is looking. Conscience. Be the best person that you can be. And the fifth C, conviction. No matter what roadblocks, detours, or pitfalls are in your path, you will overcome them. You will persevere because you have conviction. You have the seven principles of unity, self-determination, collective work responsibility, cooperative economics, purpose, creativity, and faith, and you added to them the five C's of consciousness, courage, confidence, conscience, and conviction. 7 + 5 = 12 plus you is 13. Putting the number 13 into our daily lives. That's what we must do. That's what we should do. One of my sources for discussion, aside from Atlanta Black Star and the Nation of Islam's paper, The Final Call, of course, is the paper coming out of San Antonio, Texas, The Arrow. It comes out monthly. Appreciate the brothers and sisters of the Organization for African Unity in San Antonio. Also, too, if you're a first-time listener, I don't use the word black. Black is a color. When I see the word black, my mind, I've been training my mind to automatically say African. I don't use the word race because there is no such thing as race. There is no such thing. Europeans, Caucasians contrived the idea of race. There's only one race, the human race, of which African people are the fathers and mothers of. They are not white. They're European. They're Caucasian. In fact, I like to call it for what it is. I say European Caucasian supremacy, racism, and privilege, because that's what they have imposed on the world. European Caucasian supremacy, racism, and privilege. It's culture. They impose their culture on others. There is no such thing as race. So when I see the word race, I say culture. So to me, when people say, well, words have meanings, words give images, words, yeah, they do. So let's use the right words. We were not slaves. We were captives. Imagine if we continue to say, no, we're never going to use the word slave again, because we were not slaves. We're going to use what we were. We were captives. And the Caucasian is not no slave damn master. He is the captor. He is the colonizer. He's the imperialist. No, like I said, people talking about, yeah, words, you know, how important words are. I remember when Roland Martin said that, next thing you know, out of his mouth, he's calling us slaves. And when I seen Dr. Greg Kamathi Carr, I said, hey, man, tell Roland Martin, stop calling our people slaves. I'm going to tell you, if I see him, and I may run across his path, I'm going to tell him. Hopefully I have a chance to do that. I know I saw him in Selma, you know, but I wasn't watching News One Now on TV One, which, of course, is off. It went off the air last month on the 21st. You know, and it could be a number of reasons why. And that was really the only news program strictly from our perspective controlled by us. And it kind of gives wonder, does Kathy Hughes still really own and operate TV One, News One Now, Radio One? I don't know. That's a question. But the December issue, last month's issue of The Arrow. And, of course, Baba Phil Johnson, he's an ancestor. A few years ago, he made his transition, but they still use his byline. He is still the main narrative on the front of the newspaper. There's all kinds of good stuff. I mentioned this many times before. A lot of good articles relating to us, you know, and they highlight a few people. They're highlighting Ella Baker, Sister Ella Baker, and Dr. Chancellor Williams, you know. In fact, let me tell you who Baba Phil is. Let me tell you who Baba Phil is, because they have him in the newspaper. James Philip Baba Phil Johnson was born on December 31st, 1940, in Baltimore, Maryland. He was the youngest of eight children born to Calvert Sr. and Lillian Johnson. As a youth, he organized friends into various groups and clubs, including gospel choirs that performed around the Baltimore area. Enlisting in the Army in 1962, he continued his leadership role by organizing fellow soldiers and speaking out against injustice and discrimination, regardless of the consequences. Preferring to use his middle name due to several other James Johnsons in his unit, Brother Phil received a field commission and was promoted from enlisted ranks to an officer. To fulfill the requirements of the officer's ranking, Brother Phil enrolled in college, attending San Antonio College for an associate's degree, and eventually earning a bachelor's from Our Lady of the Lake University in 1975. As a student of Our Lady of the Lake University, he organized American African Student Union and became the group's first president. Upon graduation, Brother Phil received orders for an assignment in Fort Detrick, Maryland. Fort Detrick, Maryland is where Many people believe that the AIDS virus was created as a biological weapon. Look up Fort Detrick, Maryland. During his assignment, he worked with youth in the local community of Fredericks and later organized the Community People for Community Action organization, which dealt with issues affecting the community. Realizing that education and self and knowledge of our history was needed, Brother Field founded the Organization for African Unity Incorporated in 1976. The group developed a San Antonio branch in 1979. This location later became and remains its principal headquarters in San Antonio, Texas, the Organization for African Unity. Brother Field retired from the Army's Medical Officers Corps in 1982 as a captain and began devoting his energy toward the advancement of the Organization for African Unity Incorporated. As the organization's program director and senior staff member, he became known as Baba Phil. Baba in Swahili is, well, Babu. Excuse me, he became Babu. That's me, too. I'm a Babu. Babu, Baba is teacher, B-A-B-A. This is B-A-B-U. In Kiswahili is for grandfather, Babu. Under his leadership, programs and events were developed that centered youth and adults in African history. Additionally, in keeping with the vision of bringing African people together, he traveled and participated in various workshops and conferences. And that's why I first met him at the National Black United Front Conference in Houston, Texas. He brought, in fact, as I said this before, he, if it wasn't for the brothers and sisters from San Antonio coming up with Baba Phil, a busload, I would venture to say at least about 20-some people, a lot of young people, that conference would not have been as successful as it was because of the attendance. And I'm just keeping it real. You know, it was great. It was an honor to meet him and talk with the brothers and sisters. Always seeking ways to strengthen the financial independence of the Organization for African Unity, Baba Phil briefly engaged in multi-level sales. However, upon realizing that this venture would siphon off the time needed for program development, he began to consider investing as a means of establishing a stronger financial foundation for the organization. This led to the founding of the Onyx Investment Club in 1988. Other business ventures such as the Black Voices Bookstore and a Few Choices Restaurant were developed to provide the community with services and opportunity to participate cooperative economics through buying black. Babu Phil assumed the role of principal cook in the restaurant in the beginning stages. Babu Phil was instrumental in developing the primary program of the Organization for African Unity Incorporated, the New World Learning Center. And the New World Learning Center grew out of a vision to provide African children with educational experience that would root them in their history and culture and prepare them to use their skills to improve the conditions of African people. Beginning as a Saturday school, the New World Learning Center evolved into an after-school program and then a preschool program. With Babu Phil's guidance, the New World Learning Center added grades each year until it reached the 12th grade in 1999. While this was an accomplishment, Babu Phil envisioned the New World Learning Center ultimately expanding to a university level. A loving and visionary master teacher, philanthropist, organizer, and Pan-Africanist and cultural nationalist, Babu Phil's life work consisted of serving others and promoting unity. As a servant of the people, he was not hesitant about assuming the role of chief cook and bottle washer if it meant unite. If he had to be the bottle washer, if it meant uniting African people, he'd do it. Though he believed and practiced the philosophy that your word is your bond, Babu Phil always believed that simply talking about the true freedom for African people was not sufficient. He believed in doing, being both reflective and active. And that's who the brother was. That's who Babu Phil was.
and his narratives, since I subscribed to this paper and I've been reading these narratives over my programs for all these few years, just fantastic. Truly in line with my understanding and my thinking. And this article I'm going to read to you will prove so. From Symbol to Struggle to Emerge African Unity by Babu Phil Johnson. The coming together years ago of more than a million African men and some African women in the capital of African oppression, Washington, D.C., expressed very graphically the growing frustration that African people on all levels are experienced with the global system of European, Caucasian supremacy, racism, and privilege, the ability to prevent African people from uniting. Though Africans have been meeting in every city and state on the planet trying to discern the source and the ultimate impact of drug abuse, African on African crime, unemployment, miseducation, AIDS, homelessness, racism, sexism, and materialism on African people, it took the Million Man March to bring us together. It was clear once we arrived that we were not alone in this work to take charge of our community and family situations and begin to address the problems facing us. I've attended the Million Man March in 95, the anniversary in 05, and the other anniversary in 15. If there's nothing substantive coming from that, if there is 25, it better be real. There better be something that is discussed that is just not Nation of Islam, it's just not Minister Farrakhan, but something that speaks to African unity, period, and what we're going to do on a global scale, not just in America, but the global African family. If it's talking about that, I'm there. You know, and I worked hard, particularly the first time with the Nation of Islam, with the new minister, Minister William Muhammad, great young man, great brother, and got many bus loads, and I was with the International Association of Black Professional Firefighters, and we helped provide first aid along with the sisters who were nurses and so forth. So I had an opportunity to really be involved intricately into the Million Man March. In fact, I was on the stage. I had the chance to look out there on the multitudes of our brothers and sisters, and people were still coming, even in the mid-afternoon or even later, they were still coming. An African man sang together, embraced, and made atonement for their inaction and their negative actions in family and community. A symbol of unity so powerful that it was felt to be real was projected from D.C. to the world. Captured in live footage were African men respecting themselves and others during the tight, inconvenient stand. And that's true. I never forget that brother dropped some money. Brother said, excuse me, you dropped. I mean, back in the day, you might have stepped on the money and waited for somebody to move, and then you, no, the atmosphere on that day, October 16th, 1995, was unbelievable. We didn't call ourselves out of our name. The behavior, the temperament and attitude towards money was just, I'm telling you, that's why I know what can be done. Captured in live footage were African men respecting themselves and others during the tight, inconvenient stand. African men showed honesty and generosity during the collection of the offering. Each speaker received attentiveness and responsiveness from African men during their speeches. Yes, African men pulled it together for that time. The world will never forget what they witnessed. This symbol will always stand for what African men can do. While the symbol gave an instant picture of unity sought by all, it filled the minds and spirits of all African people with love and hope. And while it was articulated by the powerful words of the many speakers shouting and praising God, the march was a symbol of unity we hope for, not the unity itself. This is important for those who felt being at the march was all that was needed, and for those who jumped on the spirit and overlooked the struggle that must take place to really materialize African unity. The struggle. We mustn't have symbolism without substance. We got symbolism, we must have substance. Symbols can and do serve an important function in the lives of the people. It is used to tone vision and to inspire the subconscious. It can go a long way in reinforcing ideas supportive of the goals we seek. For example, if the picture of African men showing love, respect, and order inspired us, and we listened sincerely to the instructions given by the different speakers, then we can use the symbol to enter and sustain ourselves in the struggle to materialize the unity. That's the function of a symbol. It can incorporate a whole life experience in a letter, a picture, or a demonstration. Symbols can conjure up feelings of love and commitment at the presentation of a carving or a demonstration designed to serve for the experience. Symbols can move people to action when so designed. So symbols are important and needed. However, symbols must be seen for what they function as, a sign or substitute for something else, and not has the actual thing or experience. Many brothers and sisters return from D.C. with that symbol of unity fixed in their minds. They immediately struck out to deal with the dilemma of oppression based just on the energies received from the Million Man March symbol. The reality of dealing with oppressed people when you are not prepared can be disastrous. All the persons who are on fire must embrace the charge that must come before we can deal with the dilemma of oppression. This change will require commitment to struggle. It will take struggle to break through the generations of self-hatred, self-destructive behavior, and anti-African values. This mind was shaped by enslavement and reinforced by tactics and strategies from the global system of European Caucasian supremacy, racism, and privilege. Just look at some of the ideas, concepts, and feelings we must overcome if we are to have unity. On the surface, we look like we have our lives in hand. However, underneath the energy from the hunt, fear, mistrust, confusion, and anger built up over centuries of oppression in America is waiting to break out. When this pent-up energy breaks through, there will be African-on-African violence because we strike out at the closest thing to us. We do not strike out others because European Caucasian supremacy, racism, and privilege severely punishes African people for offenses against others. We must struggle to overcome that. All of us who hold the belief that we are an African will resist any attempt to be included or have others included in African culture, education, and development. We must struggle. All of us who hold to the belief that we are not African. And that's a lot of us. That's why I had to read this again. Because that's a lot of us. Will resist any attempt to be included or have others include in African culture, education, development. We must struggle. All of us who hold to the belief All those who hold to belief that money alone is the answer will resist any and all attempts to develop self-help programs and insist on begging Caucasian people for money and ultimately for leadership. We must struggle. All of us who hold on to the belief that voting is the only answer to the advancement of African people will resist all other programs designed to move African people forward. Because yes, brothers and sisters, we must struggle. All of us who believe that our Caucasian, quote, brothers and sisters have our best interests at heart and will do more for us than our own people will insist that our Caucasian brothers and sisters be abreast and present during all and any planning sessions regarding African people will disrupt any plan to act independently of white
of Caucasian involvement. We must struggle. All of us who hold the belief of the color line will insist that light to damn near white is more beautiful and credible than one who is darker and who will cast votes of favor based on what they believe only. We must struggle. All of us who believe in recognition, no matter the cost, will fight for it, steal for it, and yes, even kill for it. This hunger is so great that it has been the death of many good projects in the community. We must struggle. All of us who do not believe that our Caucasian, so-called Caucasian brothers and sisters are interested only in keeping their power will do anything to keep African people in this present relationship because it works for Caucasians and it will work to help Caucasians keep Africans down and accept token rewards for doing so. We must struggle. We can see from this short list that we must embrace a healing program to restore a healthy concept of who we are and how we got here and who is truly responsible for our oppression and continues to suffer our dreams deferred. We must struggle. The struggle is not from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. It is 24/7, 365. In order to keep our study program while having to report to the plantation requires burning the midnight oil. It is impossible for us to participate in a meaningful way in our upliftment if we do not study the history of our people. Many of the erroneous ideas and concepts we hold can be challenged and eliminated through study of African history. Study is not just reading a book. It is discussing with others what we have learned, learning of ourselves, and should become our social life. We should invite people over to discussions in our homes. Time to call friends and relatives to discuss our conditions should be planned. We should call in speakers who are not mainstream in order to get the other side of our story. This study activity will remove the blinders and give us a clear vision of what we are doing so we can be clear on what must be done. The first step in emergency is cultivating the habit of self-study to show ourselves approved. As our knowledge grows, we should seek out organizations, businesses, and programs with commitment to liberation and restoring African people. Some of our wages should be donated, spent, and used to support fundraisers that keep African organizations and businesses going. Developing a political position of buying African steps up emergency to African unity. It establishes a formula that over time can result in an economic base for African community. At this point in history, what money we have is obtained from the sale of our labor. Africans have no control over the production, distribution, or sale of food, clothes, property, and other commodities. We participate very little in manufacturing and in businesses. Though Africa is the wealthiest continent on the planet, we own none of the gold mines, diamond mines, or oil wells, but our Caucasian so-called brothers and sisters do. Because we lack self-esteem, we spend the money we are trying to look Caucasian and have the trappings Caucasian people have. This makes them wealthier and forces us to work another job to keep paying for being other than ourselves. This undermines our potential for independence and self. And self-sufficiency. After we buy the symbols of the dominant culture, we have nothing left. A buy African principle instructs us to redirect some of our wages to work for our improvement as a people, as a culture. A fund for legal defense should be established to fight racism and fascism in the courts and to purchase research material and books to help the masses of African people. We should invest and save certain portions of our money to advance ourselves in the business world. Cooperative buying should be established to reduce high prices for food. When we have internalized the buy African principle, the monetary result will soon follow. Once an economic base has been established, institution building will be easily realized. Emergency is building upon the institutions needed to develop, promote, and sustain a collective upward movement of our people. It's developing the educational institutions to re-Africanize our people's development skills, produce professionals, and expose our people to all of the principles needed to organize, maintain, and promote our nation, our community. Out of these institutions will come the doctors, the nurses, and other pharmaceutical persons to take care of the health of our community. Economists and business people will be trained to open banks and businesses to manage the economic resources of our community. These institutions will cultivate the sciences to teach us proper use of natural resources and to clean up pollution in the land. We have to see ourselves as responsible for what's happening to us. We have to be ourselves through things that we can. We have to do for ourselves these things that we can do. We have to take that energy produced by the Million Man March symbol and enter into struggle. Then we will struggle armed with the Nguza Saba. And I mean the Nguza Saba that I mentioned dealing with sovereignty. For self-identity, a united Africa, knowledge, organization, economic independence, religious freedom, political power, and a sincere commitment to redefine and defend African history and humanity. As the struggle and the seven principles fine-tune our minds and spirits, we will emerge into a long-sought-after goal of African unity, not anti-Caucasian aggression. We need African unity for liberation and upliftment of African people. The term African is used throughout the era to refer to those otherwise known as African Americans, American Africans, as I like to say, blacks, etc. No matter where the descendants of African people reside in the world, we are African people, regardless of nationality. It is our responsibility, brothers and sisters. It is ours alone. No one's going to do for us but us. And we have to do it, regardless. We're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, brothers and sisters, you will have more. We'll talk more about the issues that are affecting African people's lives and what we can do to come together, the struggle that we need to engage to make these things happen. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Please, we'll be right back. Give us a call at 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832, and join the conversation. You're listening to African Perspectives. We'll be right back.
Dressed down in a braids, brothers with their afros taking center stage, watching as this culture slowly comes of age with a mind of its own. Yeah, mothers out in the yard hanging up her clothes, fathers playing with the kids, keeping them on the go. Neighborhoods beating on the heart of its soul. And that's where my feelings live. Cause I love my people the way they let it go on the dance floor. Ain't nobody gonna do it like us, no. I'm loving my people. Said I love
kitchen table. My heart's full of love, spirits in the flow, and I'm loving my people. Teachers off in the classroom giving up the love, supported by that mom and dad who want that special touch. Little acts of kindness prove to mean so much when we give what we know. Kitchen pots are banging, smell of soul food fills the air. You walk past the neighbor's house wishing you had dinner there. Better times for living when people seem to care about that place where they grow. That's why I love my people, the way they let it go on the dance floor. Ain't nobody gonna do it like us, no. I'm loving my people. Said I love. Straight to the kitchen table. My heart's full of love, spirits in the flow, and I'm loving my people. Folks gather at the church early Sunday morn. Openly they sing and praise, and gospel music's born. God gave us love enough with spirits free to run. Why can't we learn to love ourselves like we're the chosen one? Come and let me know how your life is doing good. Tell me how the blessings flow through the neighborhood. Share with me that time of feelings understood in that place we call home. 'Cause I love my people, the way they let it go on the dance floor. Ain't nobody gonna do it like us, no. I'm loving my people. So that I'm loving mine. I love soul from the stove straight to the kitchen table. My heart's full of love, spirits in the flow, and I'm loving my people. I love my people. I love the way they let it go on the dance floor. Ain't nobody gonna do it like us, no. I'm loving my people. Say that I'm loving mine. I love soul from the stove straight to the kitchen table. Can't nobody do it like us now. I'm loving my people. Say that I'm loving mine. I'm loving my people.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I hope that you have the number to call to join the conversation. Give us your perspective. The number is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Also, too, if you can subscribe to The Arrow out of San Antonio, Texas. The Arrow, you're going to jot this down. If you got your pencil and paper in your hand, that's what you should do every time you're listening to African Perspectives. You should have pencil and paper ready. The Arrow, 646 Home Green Road in San Antonio, Texas, 78220. 646 Home Green, HOLMGREEN Road, Home Green Road, San Antonio, Texas, 78220. The phone number is 210-333-0118, 210-333-0118, and of course you can email them at obu@twc.com. obu@twc.com. The Organization for African Unity.
and the Arrow newspaper. Love them. Struggle, brothers and sisters. Without struggle, there is no progress. Struggle is all, struggle is contained in everything about life is struggle. And I know a lot of times, a lot of us don't want to struggle. We don't want to do nothing. We become catatonic, don't want to move. We become lethargic, lazy. It's all about struggle, brothers and sisters, and we must struggle. You know, I get resources from various sources, get material to discuss on this program, from incidents that are happening within the African world. And what I try my best to do is present that information from an African worldview, an African-centered perspective. In fact, I always say, I don't give you my opinion. I don't give you my opinion because my opinion is profane, deeply profane. See, I don't hate anybody, but I hate the system that Caucasians have created, giving themselves a top position with everybody else at a lower position, with us at the lowest position. You see the devastating effects it has had on our humanity. It has had on human beings on this planet and how we are treated around the world. We have no friends. And because they were able to do this, many people want to be Caucasian, bleaching their skin. In fact, I saw a piece on the internet which was really ridiculous in Thailand. Was it Thailand? I think it was Thailand. They are bleaching their penis. Yes. You know, sometimes you see something like, man, is this real? But based upon the article, it is real. They're bleaching to have a, you know, it's crazy. And of course, European Caucasian supremacy, racism, and privilege is a global phenomenon, but yet European Caucasians population has been dwindling for decades. That's why in this country they said that by the year, they used to say 2050. And I know there have been some of us who look at that saying, oh, well, yeah, well, now we become the majority when we hook up with Latinos and everybody else, and now we'll be the majority. There ain't going to be nothing. There ain't going to be nothing changing. That doesn't make a difference because they are not the numerical majority where they can espouse and allow democracy of majority rules. They don't give a damn about that. In fact, what they do is they co-opt other groups and make them honorary Caucasians. As U.S. becomes more diverse, what role will non-Caucasians play in furthering European Caucasian supremacy, racism, and privilege? This is from Atlanta Black Star, one of their staff people, Brother David Love, and they have a picture of Nikki Haley. Nikki Haley was the governor of South Carolina. Nikki Haley was the governor of South Carolina when Dylann Roof killed the brothers and sisters in the church. Nikki Haley also, too, agreed to take down, after all that pressure, the Confederate flag that flies over the Capitol in South Carolina. And because of her Republican leanings, Donald Trump made her the UN ambassador. So she's the point person at the UN. And but Nikki Haley's identity, she is not Caucasian. Although she identifies as Caucasian, she is Indian. Nikki Haley is not her actual name. The rise of Donald Trump, including Caucasian reactionary responses to the Obama era, and the rise of Caucasian nationalist groups such as what was witnessed in
Charlotte, has created a space to examine the phenomena of European Caucasian supremacy, racism, and privilege. Caucasian supremacy is a system of exploiting non-Caucasian people for the purpose of maintaining wealth, power, and privilege. Particularly when applied to the United States, Caucasian supremacy is an ideology, a notion that Caucasian people are superior and are doomed to extinction unless immediate action is taken to stem a rising tide of African and other people of color. While Caucasian supremacy obviously requires the active participation of people of European descent, it also involves the assistance. It involves the assistance of non-Caucasian people. America is becoming a more America is becoming more diverse nation and is poised to become a major non-Caucasian nation, a fact that motivates Caucasian Republican voters who fear the prospects of their inevitable Caucasian minority status. A Caucasian numerical minority in America does not necessarily translate to an end to Caucasian power. However, after all, there are a number of strategies and tactics to maintain European Caucasian supremacy, racism, and privilege. Think apartheid-era South Africa. Better yet, think Trump administration policies enacted in perpetuity. These options include gerrymandering, voter ID, and other voter suppression and disenfranchisement schemes, mass deportation and incarceration, even the assimilation of certain groups such as Latinos and Asian Americans into Caucasianness. The definition of Caucasianness is fluid and has shifted over time. As immigrants from Ireland, Italy, Eastern Europe, and elsewhere have come to the United States and have blended in. Whether some non-Caucasian Americans and so-called model minorities can divest themselves of their racial and ethnic identities and earn their Caucasian card is an open question. While the vast majority of Trump cabinet officials and appointees are Caucasian, especially Caucasian men, a few faces from outside that demographic stand out. One primary example is the U.S. ambassador to the UN, Nikki Haley, the former governor of South Carolina, who was born Namrata Randhawa to Sikh parents from India, changed her name, assumed her husband's last name, and converted to Christianity. In 2001, Haley identified her culture as Caucasian on a voter registration form. As governor, Haley signed a voter ID law that was enacted amidst bogus claims of voter fraud and criticized American African leadership as racist and anti-civil rights. Well, you know, that whole voter registration piece was going around to pretty much all the states, you know, and many of the states, the Supreme Court said they were non-constitutional. Wisconsin was one of them, you know. So I'm trying to, man, I don't know why this thing is acting the way this is acting. These are some of the problems that you may have. I'm on the website of Atlanta Black Star, and it is acting funny where I can't move this back and forth. Okay. Asian Americans, which are by no means a homogeneous group and include South, East, and Southeast Asians, are sometimes given honorary Caucasian status. You know, I really want to do this, and this thing is acting really foul. I'm letting you know that right now. You were acting really foul. because it is a very good article, and it's timely in the respect that Caucasians have been experiencing negative population growth for some time across the world, which by no means our homogeneous group includes Southeast and South and East and Southwest and East Asians, and are sometimes given honorary Caucasian status and subject to the model minority label, which could obscure the racial discrimination they face. Their high rates of intermarriage, however, may place them even closer proximity to Caucasianness. Savannah Law School professor Vinyang Hyperpalia agrees that there is a concept of honorary Caucasianness. The attainment of benefits and privileges of being Caucasian without formal classification has such. Associated with Southeast Asians, Hyperpalian, who is of South Asian descent, notes that the racial ambiguity of the group, which has a wide variety of skin tones and does not fit conveniently into the traditional black and white categories, yet its members have been classified as both. Hyperpalian pointed to former Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal, who, when asked about a commissioned portrait that depicted him as light-skinned man, replied, "You mean I'm not Caucasian?" Jindal blamed the controversy over the whitened portrait on liberals' silly obsession with race. Latinos, the largest so-called ethnic group behind Caucasians at 58 million people, are increasingly identifying themselves as Caucasian, with more than half doing so in the 2010 census. While some Hispanics aspire to become Caucasian, they are encouraged by the language of the census to do so. Pew Research Center studies have found that 39% of African or Latino Africans identify as Caucasians or a Caucasian combination with other cultural groups. And 59% of self-identified Latinos believe others perceive them as Caucasian. As Mike reported, not only do some Latino descendants of immigrants stop identifying with their heritage and embrace being American, some have embraced the alt-right and that the Caucasian nationalist movement. George Zimmerman, the son of a Caucasian father and a Peruvian mother, killed Trayvon Martin and assumed the role of the Caucasian man in becoming a cause celebrity for Second Amendment rights. And Caucasian people who have sought to perceive stand your ground laws to protect against perceived threats of our community. Yep, stand your ground. That's why that was taken. You have the right to stand your ground. If you feel threatened, you can go ahead and bust a cap in somebody's you-know-what. Okay, come on now. I'm trying to get through this article, brothers and sisters, and it's not letting me do so. I shouldn't say I love the technology because that's not true. I don't. Because sometimes it works beautifully and sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes I'm able to come on this program with such efficiency and some effort, and sometimes I'm not, as witnessed by Wednesday's program when I was unable to come on the program. So, I don't know. Like I said, sometimes the technology works flawlessly, and sometimes it doesn't. And that's my hope, that it works a lot better. Okay. I think it's working a little bit better here. Meanwhile, a 2016 AFL-CIDO study found that Caucasianness is expanding, and those who can now claim a Caucasian identity increasingly include light-skinned, Latinos, East Asians, and South Asians. Has Ian Henley Lopez, the University of California Berkeley law professor, the author of the report, noted, while many Americans of European descent subscribe to the Caucasianness as a worldview, Caucasianness is also a problem among people of color who may believe that color identifies those who are makers versus takers. Lopez identifies racism between and within non-Caucasian groups, not infrequently, the more privileged in terms of color, education, social position, and wealth, gave credence to the routine stories of racially coded worth and worthlessness. These people, too, can be convinced to vote their racial position against their economic interests. Lopez noted that the demographics will not serve us and not save us. That the declining number of Caucasian Americans will not lead to the end of racial manipulation in politics. He believes that while Caucasianness has been defined as those who exclusively European descent, the color line will shift. Caucasian identity is quickly becoming available to those non-European descent, provided they are sufficiently light with Anglian names and excellent English and high economic or professional status, Lopez said, suggesting that the addition of Latinos who identify as Caucasian could cause a surge in Caucasian population. Dog whistle politics is a strategy. Power is the game for those who stoop to demagoguery, could not care less about the recruiting. Some non-Caucasians are blurring the boundaries of Caucasian identity. They don't care as long as we maintain power. If you look close to that and you are willing to be a traitor of your people while we dog your people out, that's all good. While Caucasians projected to become a minority the next quarter century, like 20-some years away. In fact, they say by 2040, well, of course, you can see that's 22 years away. Issues of Caucasian power and Caucasian supremacy are not going away anytime soon, reminding us that culture is very much a social political construct. Race is still very much a social political construct, and who passes for Caucasian can change over time. How society deals with these issues will determine how matters of racial and economic justice and coalition building will play out in emerging, demographically changing America. You know, I say all the time that in this country, in America, and how we love America, and how we hope and pray that America changes the way it is and allows people who have the ability to achieve whatever dreams that they have individually or even collectively. But one thing that we must come to understand, that America is synonymous with Caucasian. America is synonymous with European. America is synonymous with supremacy. And privilege. America, for those who came to take this country, not for those who were brought here to make it rich, not for those who came here from various other means, whether it came in, where they came from Southeast West or Southeast Asia, not those who say they're Hispanic or Latino or Caribbean or any other. Even when they come from Europe itself, you come to America, you are clear that what America is and what it was created for was for Europeans. Oh, yes, I know that some European groups were scrutinized and ostracized preyed upon, the Irish, the Italians, and other groups. But one thing for sure, those groups identify with being Caucasian. Those groups identify. So even though early on there might have been some discrimination against those groups, there is no doubt about it. Just like when the Caucasian 500 years ago said, hey, we may have warred amongst ourselves. We may have been under the rule of the Moors for 700 years here in Europe. But right now, we're going to come together and we're going to deal with everybody outside of us. We're going to go around the world claiming everybody's stuff in the name of Spain, Portugal, France, England. You name it. Germany, Belgium, and we taking their stuff. We're not coming to barter. We're not coming to bargain. We don't give a damn what your culture is, what your traditions are, what your language is, what your spirituality is. We don't give a damn about none of that. We're going to impose who we are, our culture, our language. That's why Africa is so damn messed up today. That's why African leadership is so, because we bought into it. We praise it. We want it. European Caucasian supremacy, racism, and privilege. And the vice grip that it has on our minds of why we cannot step outside of those boundaries that they've imposed upon us to look at the situation for what it is, and not that we challenge Caucasians, not that we challenge them to be respectful of us and our situation. Not that we challenge Caucasians to be honest and forthright and respectful of our humanity. No, because that's not going to happen. In fact, once we are able to step outside of the boundary, we realize the evil mindset of Caucasians and we begin to struggle to change a different course. That's why that article I just read in the first hour of the program is so profound. It is about our struggle to overcome all of this madness. But once we're able to step outside those boundaries, once we are able to release the vice grip, if you know that tool, once you turn that knob at the end of the handle and clamp down on the vice grip, you can't pull it apart. It's set. And the only way that you can pull that vice grip apart is that knob at the end of the handle. They have a vice grip on our minds. We cannot think outside of what Europeans have imposed upon us. We cannot even conceive of independence,
self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for us as African people. We can't even conceive it. And if you can't conceive it, you sure the hell can't achieve it. If you can't visualize it, if you don't understand what you need to do to struggle to overcome this, then you will never make it happen. And once you release that vice grip, and how you can, and the only way, dear brothers and sisters, that you can turn that knob is knowledge of self, consciousness. Putting those seven principles and those five C's into your life to transform you into a man and a woman that is self-defining, self-respecting, that are willing to challenge each other respectfully to overcome the ignorance that has been imposed upon us that we continue to waddle in. We can't change Caucasians. Stop it. They suffer from cognitive dissonance. They believe that they are superior. And what they have done kind of enforces that for them. What they were able to achieve, and the fact that hundreds of years later, people are still wanting what they have and wanting to do what they do, wanting to be like them, to change the color of their skin, to do something to their hair, to round their eyes out, to make a more pointier nose. And the world's so messed up that Caucasians risk skin cancer because they don't like their pale skin. They risk skin cancer to get tanned. They put silicone shots and stuff in their derrières, in their butts, so they can get a rounder butt, not that flat that they have. Put collagen in their lips to have fuller lips and little thin monkey lips. All the things that they do and we do. It is a mental sickness. We must struggle. We must struggle to overcome all of this. And struggle is 24/7, 365. You are consistently bombarded on a daily basis with images and notions of your inferiority. Consistently. Struggle, dear brothers and sisters, to overcome this because they suffer from cognitive dissonance. We can tell them and prove them all the time that they are not superior. There's ample proof. There's plethora of proof out there to show that they are not. But yet they dismiss it. They ignore it. When Jop and Dr. Sheikh Andre Jop and Dr. Thelathilio Binga argued in the symposium in Cairo that the ancient Kemetic people, the ancient Egyptians, were Africans, dark-skinned Africans. The proof is on the walls. The proof is in the reliefs on the wall. The proof is in the writing. There's so much proof. He said, I can prove to you 10 ways. Probably the smoking gun was the mummies, extracting the melanin from the mummies, proving the debate was won. But today, still, 40, almost 50 years later, they still advocate that ancient Kemetic society was Caucasian. Because if you watch National Geographic, the Learning Channel, Discovery Channel, PBS, whatever, if they have a dramatization or an illustration of ancient Kemet, of human beings, of people, they Caucasian. But if they have somebody serving somebody, exactly, they're going to be dark skinned, just like you see on the in the movies, like you've seen in the Ten Commandments. When it had Moses' supposed mama, the Egyptian mama, coming to the area where the so-called Hebrews are living, she's carried by four Africans. But everybody else Caucasian in Africa. Just like the Exodus story. Moses, the Ten Commandments movie. And then, of course, they made a recent one a few years ago with Christian Bale as Moses, and some little Caucasian kid has a spirit that speaks to him. And, of course, some Caucasian-looking dude playing Ramesses. And then they had another movie come out some months later called Gods of Egypt with Gerard Butler has Set. And some other Caucasian dude has Heru. They did have one brother playing one of the deities, you know. But, you know, the bottom line is they do what they want. They don't give a damn about proof, honesty. They don't give a damn about being correct. They don't care. It's what I say. It's what I do. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on Time for an Awakening. Timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We only have a few more minutes left. I'll be talking with a few others to make sure that we are smooth all next week. Although I'm going to be honest with you, I do like this format more so than the previous format on Blog Talk Radio and the prospects and the idea of a wider audience. I would love to engage more with some conversation from you, our listeners. And I know sometimes you just want to listen, and that's cool too. I would definitely be bringing on more and more of our brothers and sisters who have various levels of expertise. I'll try my best to bring on some sisters as well. Because we, brothers and sisters, need each other. The male and female principle in African society, unlike Caucasian society, the male and female principle, there was an understood symbiotic relationship between men and women. We need each other. It was respect for women. In fact, you rose through the rulership through the woman. Through the woman. So, I'm going to play this last piece. It's a beautiful piece. It's the power of faith. It's what we need. And we need each other. Brothers and sisters, have a great weekend. Do something positive. Enjoy it. No matter what the weather is, let's do it with love for ourselves and each other. Brothers and sisters, you've been listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakeningradio.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Have a blessed and wonderful weekend. Shem Hotep, go in peace. Asante Sana. Thank you.
Every day, from the moment I wake, there are thoughts. Just shines through.